The Tories are just making matters worse for women and professionals in Northern Ireland with this deceitful defence of their appalling rape clause. The words of the Shadow Secretary of State, Owen Smith, this morning, who is with us today. Owen, good morning to you.
Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning. Thank you for talking to us today. Set this out for us, Owen.
Well, essentially, the rape clause is a part of the universal credit regulations that are being rolled out even as we speak. This week was the second phase of the rollout across Northern Ireland, and it's because of what they call the two-child policy, which limits the amount of child tax credit women can get after the first two children. There is an exemption that was passed in the Commons several months ago now, that if the third or subsequent child is conceived in what's called non-consensual sex, i.e., as a result of rape, then the woman concerned can apply for exemption and thereby get child tax credits for that child. Now, I think it's an appalling policy in and of itself, and an appalling way to go about it. But the problem that is unique to Northern Ireland is because of the way in which that law interacts with the 1967 Criminal Law Act in Northern Ireland, which says it's an offence not to divulge to the authorities any information you have regarding a crime that might lead to a prosecution, and that not divulging that information leads to the person who's holding on to it punishable with potentially up to 2 years in jail. Effectively, both the women who apply for exemption under the rape clause and the social workers or midwives or nurses who have to endorse, if you like, ratify their claim, both risk being prosecuted. And I thought that this was such a extraordinary and disgraceful state of affairs that I wrote to, and that ministers were being not straightforward with the public about this by pointing out that nobody's ever been prosecuted for not divulging a rape previously, but saying at the same time that it was an offence not to divulge the information. But I wrote to Barry McGrory, the Director of Public Prosecutions for Northern Ireland, who confirmed to me very straightforwardly that it is a criminal offence.
And I can see the letter. So look, obviously we're going to look at the universal credit element of this in just a second. It's central to this story. But I'm reading this letter from the Public Prosecution Services Director, Barry McGrory, to you, Owen. And here's the key paragraph. He says, "It is, however, a potential offence to withhold information regarding an act of rape. The legislation does not distinguish between a victim and third parties to whom a disclosure is made. Each is potentially liable to prosecution."
Absolutely right, which is why I thought it was profoundly misleading of the country and of the House of Commons when I asked Chloe Smith, the Northern Ireland Minister in Northern Ireland Questions, on Wednesday, whether she thought that was the case. And she said, in a very glib one-word answer, no. She was misleading the House of Commons when she said no, because as the DPP and indeed one of her other ministers, Damien Hines in the DWP, has confirmed to me in another letter, they are very clear that it is a breach of the law in Northern Ireland, and therefore the women and their professionals are risking prosecution.
Yeah, Barry McGrory has also been very clear in this letter that there has never been a prosecution taken. So, read between the lines of that, Owen. There's never been a prosecution taken.
No, but nor has there ever been a set of circumstances in which women have to confess to having been raped in order to access Social Security payments.
I'll just read his exact words. He says, "That is not to say, however, that a prosecution would necessarily follow in respect of either a claimant making a disclosure for the first time or a third party becoming aware of such information. The circumstances of each case would have to be carefully considered in the context of both the evidential and public interest limbs of the test for prosecution. You should be aware, however, that the PPS has never prosecuted the victim of a rape who is delayed in making a report." So, two elements to this. They're saying they've never done it, but they're also saying it is a potential offence. So a potential offence for a victim of rape could be prosecuted for not disclosing that she's a victim.
Yep, which I think is absolutely disgraceful and extraordinary. And it's precious little comfort, I think, in particular, perhaps, for the midwives and nurses and social workers who under this rape clause have to, you know, be third-party signatories to the claim by the woman for exemption, they are placed in a very invidious position as local government or government public officials who are knowingly breaching the law in signing off on the forms. And they know that because the official guidance that they've been given in Northern Ireland by the chief nursing officer and the chief social worker, etc., makes it very clear that in processing these claims, they are knowingly breaking the law. So I think it's absolutely cold comfort for them to hear that there's been no prosecutions previously, because, as I said, crucially, there's never been an instance where somebody has had to formally declare that they were raped and thereby confess that they have knowledge that might lead to a prosecution in order to access social security.
Our business economics editor, John Campbell, is here this morning. John, just set out to us, obviously universal credit is at the heart of this story. Set out to us what that is.
It's basically the biggest change in the benefits system in a generation. So what it does, it takes six core benefits, which include income support, job seekers allowance and tax credits, and it rolls all them into one single benefit, one single payment. And the idea behind this was to simplify the system, make it much more responsive to people who are in work, and make sure that work always pays. Because under the old system, many people would face a cliff edge where you're in low income, but you can end up losing basically all your benefits as soon as you start working 16 hours a week. So that meant for many people, it wouldn't be worth going into a job with limited hours, because then they would lose their housing benefit, for example. So this new system is supposed to see your payments basically being sort of tapered off as you start to do more work. So that's the big idea behind it. Now, its implementation has been difficult. It's taken a lot longer than originally planned. It's been a lot more expensive to develop the system than originally planned. And there are also particular elements of the design of the system which don't appear to be working very well. The big one being that when you first come to make your claim for universal credit, you're having to wait at least 6 weeks. And that is the way the system has been designed. That was always the intention. But you can imagine that for some people, that's a very difficult situation, because you may find yourself unemployed and then you're basically told you're not going to get any money for 6 weeks, which can be incredibly difficult. And what they found in England especially is what's happened there is people have really fallen into arrears on their rent payments, for example, and then as they're waiting to get this new benefit, they're quickly finding themselves into this whole spiral of rent arrears, not having enough money for food and all the rest of it. There are some emergency payments in the system, but that's the big concern about this system, is that you have to wait 6 weeks initially, and then for many people, they're actually waiting a lot longer than 6 weeks.
And then at the heart of the story that I guess we're concentrating on this morning is the part of universal credit that applies to the first two children.
Yeah, exactly. So basically, the way that the system has been designed, it's so that people with larger families really aren't getting a big increase in their money.